Bitcoin is often referred to as a secure timestamping service. We never had a global record of truth with trustworthy timestamps. So how did this come about? It's generally due to proof of work being combined to a few simple rules by which miners must abide. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we've got another great read today. This one, again, by Jameson Lopp. Again, I've been going through a lot of his blog and reading things and also trying to just do audio for them specifically. And this was one that kind of struck me that I've never really talked about this on the show before, and this is like a really fun deep dive. Like the subtitle of this piece actually is a deep dive into the game theory behind keeping timestamps of Bitcoin blocks reasonably accurate. And honestly, that's about as good as a description of this article as it gets. And I've not really talked about the time warp attack. I mean, I know I have in passing, or we've talked about it in conversations with like an interview or something like that, but we never like hit the topic. And I think it's a really worthwhile topic to hit, and I just kind of got interested into thinking about all this stuff when I was doing the audio, and I was like, this one definitely deserves an episode of the show. This episode is brought to you by the Cold Card Hardware Wallet, where you will keep your Bitcoin so that you know that you own your Bitcoin. A secure, feature-rich, versatile, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet for the coldest of cold storage. 9% off with code BITCOINAUDIBLE for listeners of this show. The link will be right down in the show notes. And then also Fold app and the Fold card. This is a debit card, not a hardware wallet, a debit card that gets you sats back on everything in your life. And I just got an assessment. I am in the top 1% of sat stackers with the Fold card. And I know it because I'm good like that. Two most valuable tricks are the PayPal bill pay and gift cards. Use freaking gift cards. The link is in the show notes if you want to check it out and get some free sats. So without further ado, let's get into today's read. This is another one by Jameson Lopp on blog.lopp.net, which is a phenomenal resource. So the link will be in the show notes if you want to check it out. And this piece is titled Bitcoin Timestamp Security by Jameson Lopp. A deep dive into the game theory behind keeping timestamps of Bitcoin blocks reasonably accurate. Bitcoin is often referred to as a secure timestamping service. We never had a global record of truth with trustworthy timestamps, so how did this come about? It's generally due to proof of work being combined to a few simple rules by which miners must abide. The primary functions of miners are to take unordered, unconfirmed transactions and put them in a specific order. Bundle up the transactions into a valid container, or a block, and timestamp the block within an acceptable range of time. This final attribute is what enables Bitcoin to have a controlled release of the supply of Bitcoins. Otherwise, Bitcoin would suffer from rapid inflation whenever the hash rate increased. But it turns out that this attribute assigns quite a bit of utility to the Bitcoin protocol, and also makes it possible for folks to use Bitcoin as a data anchor for other services. Because we have reasonably strong assurances that timestamps fall within a given range, and we have mathematical assurance of the amount of energy required to rewrite the blockchain history, Bitcoin provides a sound anchor for timestamping of data. But how reliable is it? Bitcoin's timestamp flexibility. In order for the time field of a block header to be considered valid by nodes, it must meet two criteria. One, be less than 2 hours in the future from your node's adjusted time, which is a function of your local machine's clock and your peer's time. And two, be greater than the median timestamp of the past 11 blocks. The first rule makes sense. We obviously don't want anyone claiming to be from the future, and it's very easy for nodes to reject such claims because we're all in general agreement about what time it currently is. There are a variety of ways that one can check the current time, though a very popular means of computers syncing their clocks is via the network time protocol. However, ensuring that a time isn't too far before a sensible point is harder. This is because we can't assume that a node is validating the block anywhere near the time it is initially created. Nodes need to be able to leave and rejoin the network for any reason or no reason. A node that was too far behind the tip of the chain would start rejecting historical blocks if they had to be created within a few hours of the current time. Quote, nodes can leave and rejoin the network at will, accepting the proof-of-work chain as proof of what happened while they were gone. Satoshi Nakamoto, the Bitcoin White Paper. Perhaps counterintuitively, there is no rule requiring that a block's timestamp has to be after the timestamp of the previous block. If you think about it, such a rule could cause problems. If a miner created a block with a timestamp nearly 2 hours in the future, the next block would also have to be far into the future. It would be harder for other miners to self-correct the median time of the past 11 blocks. Also recall that while blocks are expected to be produced about every 10 minutes, there's no real guarantee. Blocks could range from anywhere from several milliseconds to several hours apart. While the expected median time of the past 11 blocks should be 1 hour ago, it could be far more or far less. Pushing the window. If you think about how an adversary might try to expand the acceptable timestamp window, it's pretty clear that no adversary will be able to push the timestamps to more than 2 hours in the future, no matter how much hash power they have. However, an attacker with sufficient hash power could put some drag on the progression of, quote, Bitcoin time by only minting blocks with timestamps that are barely valid, that are just 1 second after the median time of the past 11 blocks. Are there incentives to do this? In the extreme case, a time warp attack offers short-term financial incentives that we'll discuss later. It's less clear what incentives may exist for only dragging the timestamps by a few hours here and there, though considering that other protocols can be built on top of Bitcoin, such as Lightning Network, and can involve time locks, there could be other protocols in the future that can be gamed by slowing the progression of timestamps on the blockchain. Hash power time dragging. Since the earliest valid block time is based upon the median time of the past 11 blocks, an adversarial miner needs to generate a lot of blocks in order to induce any noticeable drag on the MTP. Let's assume a situation where all miners are roughly in sync via the network time protocol, but there is one adversarial miner who is trying to drag the median time of the past 11 blocks as much as possible. One point is quite clear. It was a smart decision by Satoshi to use the median timestamp of the past 11 blocks rather than the average, as average would be more manipulable. Another way to think of median time passed is that it basically means the timestamp of the sixth most recent block if all the timestamps are in order. If they aren't, the algorithm just reorders them. As such, if you want to have a non-negligible effect on this value, you need to have solved six of the past 11 blocks. In order to sustain such an attack, you need 55% of the hash power, at which point one of the main assumptions of Bitcoin's thermodynamic security breaks down. But a miner with less hash power could still achieve this on occasion if they have a streak of luck. How hard is it to find 6 out of 11 blocks? Well, the chance that a given miner will solve the next block is basically the same as their percentage of the total network hash rate. Thus, if you only have 1% of the hash rate, which is still quite a lot, then your chance of minting 6 out of any 11 contiguous blocks equals the product of 0.01 to the power of 6 and 0.99 to the power of 5 multiplied by 11 factorial divided by the product of 5 factorial and 6 factorial, which equals about 1 in 2 billion. If you maintained 1% of the hash rate, then the expected number of blocks that would need to occur before you found 6 out of 11 would be over 43,000 years. A more generalized formula for the expected wait time to pull off a successful time drag attack would be 1 over 462 times the percent of hash rate to the 6th power times 1 minus the percent of hash rate to the 5th power, and then whatever that amount is divided by 144 blocks per day equals the number of days it would take to pull off a successful attack. As we can see, for attackers to conduct such an attack on any meaningful timescale, then they'd need a decent-sized mining pool with at least 10% of the total network hash rate. He charts the equation against the percentage of total hash rate on a curve that shows you don't even break below 100 days on the time it would take to get 6 blocks in a row until you reach about 10% of the network hash rate. Maximum drag. However, in order to induce the maximum drag on the median time passed, a miner would want to solve 6 blocks in a row. If their 6 of the past 11 blocks are not all in order, then the time gaps created by other miners would force the adversarial miner to set the timestamps of their blocks more than 1 second after each other, because the median time passed for each block would jump forward significantly as honest miners place more accurate timestamps on their blocks. How hard is it to solve 6 blocks in a row? If we once again assume a miner with 1% of the network hash rate, then the chance of minting any given streak of 6 blocks in a row is 0.01 to the 6th power, or roughly 1 in a trillion. If you maintained 1% of the hash rate, then the expected number of blocks that would need to occur before you found 6 in a row would be nearly 2 million years. A more generalized version of the expected time to successful time drag attack formula would be 1 divided by the percent of hash rate to the 6th power, again divided by 144 blocks per day, which equals the number of days. This attack is even more difficult to pull off, requiring more like 20 or 30% of the network hash rate to occur in a reasonable time frame. As you may imagine, this happens quite rarely, and when it does, people notice. The last times it happened were in July 2014 by GHash, which had over 40% of the hash power for a while and even touched 51% for a short time. It also happened 9 months earlier, when BTC Guild had nearly half of the hash power. If you have 50% of the hash power, then your chance of minting 6 blocks in a row is 0.5 to the 6th power, or 1 in 64. If you maintained 50% of the hash rate, then you could expect to find 6 blocks in a row nearly every 12 hours. It's clear that it's not possible to sustain a drag on Bitcoin's median time passed on a long-term timescale without majority hash power. But you could drag it by as much as several hours for a short period, a block or so, with the right combination of luck and patience. If you assume that other miners are fairly accurate with their timestamps, then the median time passed should be approximately 1 hour ago, though it could be several hours more due to the variability in blocks being found. If you manage to mint 6 blocks with timestamps of 1 hour ago plus 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, etc., then at the 6th block, the MTP would be approximately 2 hours ago. If we assume an extreme condition of 1 hour gaps between blocks, then the median time passed would be 6 hours ago. By allowing a reasonable amount of flexibility with block timestamps, and then taking a median time of recent blocks, we end up with an algorithm that is pretty hard to game, but it's not so brittle as to adversely affect miners who are somewhat out of sync with the real time. Let's do the time warp again. What if an attacker did have more than 50% of the network hash power, and they wanted to slow the passage of Bitcoin time? They could do some pretty nasty stuff. Such an adversarial miner could prevent the timestamp from advancing by more than 1 second with each new block. If they did this for a long enough period of time and ended up creating blocks on the difficulty retarget intervals with timestamps that made it look like the previous 2016 blocks took far more than 2 weeks to create, They could game the retargeting logic to decrease the mining difficulty by up to 75% every 2016 blocks. Eventually, with the difficulty low enough, they could mint as many blocks as they wanted in a given time period, and thus receive more mining reward than expected. An optimized time warp attack could mine all the remaining Bitcoin in 18.7 days. We've actually seen similar behavior occur on Bitcoin's Testnet 3, due to a quirk in the difficulty retargeting, and now Testnet 3 has minted 1,482,878 blocks in 8 years, about 350% of the expected emission. Time warp attacks are nothing new. Such an attack was first performed against a coin called Geistgeld in 2011, and it was discussed as being a variant of the 51% attack on Bitcoin Talk. Geistgeld was intended to test out the upper limits of block generation rate via very short block times, as well as the behavior of a cryptocurrency with almost stable generation rate and no upper limit or alteration to supply. Whitecoin appears to have also suffered from a time warp attack that was conducted in 2014. In 2018, Verge was hit by such an attack. Then 6 weeks later, it was hit again. In general, cryptocurrencies that have a minority of hash power for a given style of hardware, ASICs or GPUs, are vulnerable to time warp attacks because they are inherently vulnerable to 51% attacks. Interestingly, while time warping is often referred to as an attack because it results in unintended behavior of the system, some people have shown that it can be exploited for potentially desired uses. In 2015, Vitalik Buterin described a way to speed up blocks via a soft fork and thus increase on-chain capacity. In 2018, Bitcoin developer Mark Friedenbach made a proposal for leveraging this unintended behavior in order to add new functionality to Bitcoin. In his, quote, forward blocks proposal, Mark states that his method enables scaling up on-chain transaction volume to 3,584 times current levels, changing the proof-of-work algorithm in a backwards-compatible way, sharding, a rebatable fee market for consensus fee detection, and smoothing out drops in miner subsidy, along with prerequisite protocol pieces for confidential transactions, mimblewimble, unlinkable anonymous spins, and sidechains. Such proposals are contentious, however, and would likely force anyone building systems reliant upon the timestamps in the Bitcoin block headers to look elsewhere for that data. It would also be fairly easy for such a change to be blocked, as Greg Maxwell stated on the Bitcoin developer mailing list. Quote, it can be fixed with a soft fork that further constrains block timestamps, and a couple of proposals have been floated along these lines. Greg Maxwell. In conclusion, Bitcoin's timestamp security and the simple rules constraining the window of acceptable timestamps have withstood 10 years in an adversarial environment, despite their known weaknesses. We know that a 51% cabal of miners could wreak havoc on the network, at least for a short time, but this has never happened, likely because the incentives are not aligned for miners to do so. Rational miners would not choose a short-term gain in return for killing the long-term golden goose. This episode is brought to you by CoinKite, the makers of the Cold Card hardware wallet, the Tap Signers, the Block Clock Mini, the Block Clock Micro, the Open Dime, the Sats cards, and even more that you can find at CoinKite.com, or you can go through my link at BitcoinAudible.com/ColdCard. Both will be right there in the show notes. Plus, they are offering listeners of this show a 9% discount with code BitcoinAudible. You do not truly own your Bitcoin unless you are holding your own keys. And if you want to securely and safely hold your own keys, you use a Cold Card hardware wallet. You get the keys off of an internet-connected device, and the Cold Card is air-gapped by default, but your Bitcoin keys never leave the device. They are never exposed. You can use a phone or a computer that's got viruses on it and has terrible security. And as long as you confirm your address or any transactions you are signing on your Cold Card device, your Bitcoin are safe. This is the beauty of a secure hardware wallet. And you can get 9% off the Cold Card again with code BitcoinAudible and it's right there in the show notes. All right, so this was a little bit more technical just because it's diving deeper into a very specific thing, a very specific element about Bitcoin. Because one of the fascinating things about the idea of Bitcoin being a timestamp server or Bitcoin being a global consensus mechanism on kind of the historical, what has happened in the history of Bitcoin, is that proof of work gives a form of probabilistic time. And it only uses local time, it only uses the machine time, in order to regulate the variability from what is allowed from any particular node's perspective. Because obviously there is no decentralized form of time. There's no way to know exactly what time it is or to be perfectly in sync with any other nodes on the network. Like the clock could be wrong, they could be trusting a server or a part of a network that is separated or is off for some reason. There could be a bug, there could be a malicious attack, or you could manually change it on your computer and you could change your internal clock. So because there's specifically no ability to have a non-trust-based view of exactly what time it is, a lot of really nuanced elements come into play and trying to make sure that there are no malicious attackers that can confuse the network, so to speak, or they can twist the idea of the progression of time and the difficulty adjustment in the network. Now, one of the really crazy things about this is that even though time is inherently subjective or something that does not have a consensus mechanism on it, that Bitcoin is able to still, with proof of work, prove a probabilistic version of time so that we can just know the progression. It doesn't necessarily matter that the last block was definitely 10 minutes ago if somebody else maybe think from their perspective it looks like it was 13 minutes ago or something, like clocks are off and the timestamp is inaccurate. And I think there are examples, I feel like I've looked these up in the past or something, in which the timestamp was like goofed, like it was actually off from whatever the bulk of the nodes were seeing. And in fact, there are timestamps on past or current blocks or younger blocks that are actually older than the block before it. So it looks like, you know, let's say just in a simple example, it looks like block 10 actually came in 10 seconds before block 9, even though obviously that's impossible because it is only valid because it uses the proof of work, the hash of block 9 in order for block 10 to be valid. So that's one of the really interesting things, is that it specifically overrides, it allows this fluctuation or this ambiguity a little bit in the fact that time is just never going to be consistent among all the nodes or devices on the network. And so proof of work basically trumps it. Is if it's got the block hash for block 9 and it's done the proof of work for block 10, the timestamp doesn't really matter because we know the order of events. It necessarily had to happen that way. But I think the fact that you can kind of break down so many elements of, or just so much in kind of the nuance of just these elements, and the fact that median time is a far better approach than the average time, because if you had the average time, then going back to the example of how, you know, it's 1 in 2 billion for them to just get 6 blocks in the previous 11 that he used in that first equation, and then it's like 1 in a trillion to get 6 blocks in a row, is that if it was the average, well, then the 1 in 2 billion, you got a factor of 500 in difference between the median and the average. Is that even if you didn't hit the median block, the one that's in the middle of the last 11, well, then as long as you got 6 and you manipulated all 6 of those, it would make no difference. You would still be able to manipulate it to that degree. So you would have that 1 in 2 billion chance at 1% of the network hash rate. Whereas because you have to do 6 in a row, you have to make sure you hit that median block. And necessarily so, because every block has a median block, right? It's always the previous 11. Well, that's a pretty substantial difference in probability of success for such a simple decision. And when you saw If anybody remembers the fork to Bcash and the disaster that their difficulty retarget had with the emergency, the EDA, and the huge shift, like there was, like they would have blocks coming in like by the second, literally for like a couple of hours, and then the difficulty would just absolutely plummet because they immediately started gaming the fact that they lopsided the difficulty adjustment, is that it could decrease at a far faster rate than it could increase. And so miners just jumped on and off the network to have the most, like, an absolutely chaotic production of blocks. And the even the developers, when they first started talking about it, like, and it was obvious that this was a problem, they were like, oh, well, it will even out over time and it will stop because Bcash is valuable and it's a better Bitcoin and blah, blah, blah. And the exact opposite happened, is that it got easier and easier to game it because all of the miners began gaming it. And so it was totally expected. And then it just became the normal behavior. The miners just shifted over constantly, and they kind of gamified, is not really, they systematized the manipulation or the exploitation of this bad design. And it seems like such a simple thing, but it can have such a terrible set of consequences and create such an unreliable and absurd activity on the network or behavior of the network. And this is one of those things where this is why you don't mess with the base layer, is there's so much nuance. And really the biggest indicator, like, it's worthwhile to think about it. It's worthwhile to test alternatives. It's worthwhile to spin up a testnet 3 and see about, you know, what quirks of the difficulty adjustment look like and to be able to respond to them. But when it's worked for 13 years, 14 years, you don't touch it. You don't mess with some of the fundamental elements like that unless there is some sort of existential threat, unless there's something very seriously wrong. And it's interesting that this is actually one of the, you know, one of the pretty messy things that someone with a 51% hash rate or more than half the hash rate sustained for the network, one of the things that can actually cause a problem. Now, one thing that LOP actually doesn't address here that I think is actually interesting to take into account, because he talks about the extent to which this manipulation could go on. Like, if you took a long-term approach and they did a consistent, perpetual attack on forcing the time warp every single difficulty adjustment over and over and over again until they, well, basically maximally, they did it until they got all of the Bitcoin, is that the optimized time warp attack with as clear and as large a manipulation as possible, assuming all probabilities work out perfectly, is that they could mine all the remaining Bitcoin in 18.7 days. Now, that seems crazy. Now, obviously, this is insanely unlikely because just to start off with, you need more than half the Bitcoin hash rate. But think about what that does. If Bitcoin literally doesn't plummet to $0 during this event, which arguably, like, the price would probably be chaotic for a little while, but technically blocks are just going to be coming in and a whole lot of blocks will be mined. But here's the thing, is that this will entice so many people to mine Bitcoin because essentially the payout for Bitcoin mining just skyrocketed. Is that if you're mining a year's worth of blocks in a day, well, then you literally have 365 times the Bitcoin block payout in an hour. So this is the first thing that, if I saw this occurring, the very first thing that I would do, if blocks were coming in every 10 seconds, I would turn my miners on. Like, 100%, it's hot as shit outside today, but my miners would be on, without a doubt. And it wouldn't even necessarily, I mean, I would cut them on out of like, oh my God, I gotta defend the network. But I would also cut them on out of like, holy shit, I can get a ton of Bitcoin. And even better if the Bitcoin price fell, because that means I have slightly less competition if I can get any less competition possible, and I can stack at the exact same time. So the thing about the theoretical attack is that I think the economics still works against it because it requires that nobody is sitting on the sidelines with hardware to turn on in the case of higher profitability for the Bitcoin network, which I think we know to be not true, which means that without a significant majority, without 60%, 70% of the network basically they might end up with a minority just by causing the time warp attack and causing block production to increase so substantially. But all the nuance involved in this is just really fascinating to unpack. And I know this is a little bit more technical, but I was doing the audio for this one for LOP, and I don't really think I've ever really talked about this to any great degree on the show, and it's a cool topic. So I hope you guys got value out of this. Hope you liked this one, because I certainly did. And definitely check out LOP.net for the just massive amount of resources and things that he goes into. There are some more technical pieces that just don't work that great in audio. So I'll be trying to do as many as I think really work. And this one actually has really great visuals just because I think the charts are a pretty good indication, or I really like the probabilistic charts for some reason. The curves on basically like how viable is this attack when it comes to how much hash power you have on the network and what's the time it would take to wait in order to conduct this attack. And it's interesting too, because and he specifically kind of says this, laying out at the beginning, is that there's not really any great benefit to a short-term attack. Like, it could be a big pain, and it could be very difficult, and it could also have negative consequences for the miner conducting it, but there doesn't really seem to be any short-term benefit. Like, without the very long, sustained, successful attack, there's not a whole lot you can do with this, it doesn't seem like. So I'd be curious to know what you think, and if you like this piece, and I'll have the link in the show notes if you want to check out the charts and the other kind of visuals that they have with it. And of course, don't forget to check out Fold, the Fold app, and the Cold Card. Fold app is the best way to stack sats just by changing to a different debit card, and then the Cold Card obviously is where you are going to put it to keep those sats safe. Links, goodies, discounts, free sats, all that good stuff in the show notes. All right, guys, I am out for today. Thank you so much for listening. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. When you want to know how things really work, study them when they're coming apart. William Gibson.